This is Mark Little, and this is the monthly advisor packed session. Welcome. We have quite a bit to cover today. You know, it's funny. We do a really good job, the team with the advisor pack team, when we know you're seriously implementing. So when you submit questions throughout the month, we do a great job of just getting back with you as quickly as we can, because we know you're sitting there waiting to get the answer so that you can implement. And so we keep up with the questions. And what I normally do is I try to hand select one or two or maybe three questions for this session each month. I try to hand pick the questions that I think would be the most useful to the group. But occasionally we get questions in sort of at the last minute, and I just hold them. And that's what happened this month. We got a flurry of questions just right at the end over the last day or two. So I just held them over, and I figure we'll deal with those today. So I hope that they are relevant for everyone on the call today. So the whole program boils down to this pledge. It's just a new paradigm in financial advisory, in the financial advisory business. If you're a financial advisor, we call it in our industry a retail financial advisor. So if you're a financial advisor that serves individuals and families, then this program boils down to this one thing. It's that you are making an advisor-packed pledge to not every client, but every ideal client. So that implies you've got a profile of a client that you call ideal. And for those clients, this is your advisor-packed pledge. And your advisor-packed is an acronym. PACT is an acronym, and it stands for Protection, Attention, Coordination, and Transparency. And we spend a lot of time in this program talking about those four things. Where they come from is after a number of years of listening to recordings of multimillionaires who I was talking with, and when I stopped talking and they started asking questions about what I was doing and my offering. I listened to over 200 recordings, and it became very clear to me that there were four client expectations, and they're more than expectations. These are the four things that the more affluent and the more successful the potential client, the more they claim they cannot find advisors anywhere at any price to do these four things. And so if you'll step up and you'll make the pledge to do these four things, then just right there, you'll be in a category of your own. There will be very few, if any, financial advisors in your community that are both able and willing to make this pledge and be serious about it, serious to the client that you're going to do these things. And if you want to know more about it, it is one of the modules in this program that we never take away from you. So one of the very first modules you get is about, this advisor packed philosophy. So if it's been a while since you've been through that module, that course that we give you right at the front, we always recommend, and we talk to advisors who are really seriously implementing our methods and getting just incredible results. Well, these advisors actually go back and listen to that course regularly, at least once a year, just to get the basics, kind of reposition your mind around these four things to make sure that you're doing these four things for your client. Because trust me, having done it for 30 years, these four things are easier said than done. Okay. Let me just pause and say for a moment, we know that a financial advisor, we know when a financial advisor, a member of this program, is seriously implementing the system. How do we know? Because they have lots of questions. So that's why we always encourage and welcome and enjoy you clicking that contact us link in the system, so that when, as you're going through each module, as you're trying to seriously implement these ideas, we know that you're going to get to points where you get stuck, or maybe you need direction, or maybe you kind of get this. I tell you, it's all forms of limiting beliefs, but things cross through your mind like, oh, yeah, I'm sure this works for Mark, but I can't imagine this would work for us, or this just will not fly with my clients, or whatever kind of limiting belief is going through your mind on some issue that you're dealing with in this program, why leave it up in the air? Why not just click contact us and ask us? So there is no question that's off limits. I do often say that the program is about serving existing clients. So we don't focus on client acquisition in this program. There are other programs for that. And actually, it didn't hold somebody back on this call. They asked about it anyway. And that's just a case in point. Even though this program is about serving clients and exceeding their expectations and then receiving, as a measurement, receiving lots of unsolicited client referrals over time. Yeah, that's what this program's about. But if you have a question about client acquisition, ask it. Ask us anything. If it's in your mind, click the contact us link and we'll deal with it. I will always try to answer the question, even if it's beyond the scope of this program, because we know you're just simply trying to make forward progress. You're trying to get your business ramped up and designed exactly the way you want it so that you are moving your business quickly towards being that engine which will really serve your ideal life and drive the money that will create your ideal life for you and your family. So ask your questions and I promise we will answer. Okay. First question. After an ideal client is working with us and the subject matter expert team, so this, you know, they're working with us and they're working with our team, who is the client directed to call if they have a tax or estate planning question? All right, so that's a good question. Are they told to call the particular subject matter expert on our team directly, or do we want all the calls to come to us, the advisor, first, and then we direct the call to the subject matter expert? If we direct them to call the subject matter expert directly, do we tell the subject matter expert to call us back and fill us in on what happened? Excellent, excellent questions, relevant questions, and you ask the full question. It's kind of funny when we get questions like this. Oftentimes, I have to kind of complete the question because you left something out, but you didn't. You gave the whole question. So clients are going to have issues. They're going to have a tax question or an estate planning question. And so when they call in with that, you know, do we put them directly with the subject matter expert? And then if we do, how do we find out what happened on that call with the subject matter expert? Well, let me just start by saying that until I actually see evidence that a subject matter expert on my team is capable of exceeding an ideal client's expectations. And by the way, that usually takes me 4 to 8 months to know for sure. And if you're wondering how I came up with that time frame, find the question box in this system and just ask. But it's tied neatly to the 3-meeting process. But usually takes me 4 to 8 months. That's 1 to 2 client meeting cycles to know whether a subject matter expert even understands and knows how to exceed a client's expectations. Until then, I ask all ideal clients to contact our administrative manager in my office whenever they need anything. In other words, it's easier for the client anyway. We have this administrative manager. They're not on the financial team, but they are your single, simple point of contact. So let me just back up and say that when we invite a new subject matter expert on the team, their professional skills are never in question. As a matter of fact, our process to acquire subject matter experts, and that is in this program, the process to acquire subject matter experts, our process screens really well for that. So we have technically competent people, but typically what we don't know about a subject matter expert is whether or not clients are going to be impressed with them or not. Nor do we know how skillfully the new subject matter expert is going to be at actually being able to interact directly with clients. In other words, we've not seen their communication skills with clients. We've seen their communication skills talking to us as we were in the process of inviting them onto our team. We know they're technically competent and maybe borderline brilliant at what they do. But until we actually see them interacting with a client, we don't know their communication skills with clients. We don't know, we don't know whether their charisma is going to click with clients or with certain clients and not other clients. And we also don't know if they are able to remain focused, and that is in the conversations. Are they able to pick up on clues of what the client's saying so that they understand how to figure out what the client's expectations are and then go out and exceed those? So I'm always on the call when subject matter experts are new. So in answer to your question, the way we recommend this is that when a client calls in with a question, they're going to call into the administrative manager. You set up a three-way call with you on the call. So the administrative manager, who is your right-hand person, whatever you call them, we call them the administrative manager. You could call it a receptionist or a sales assistant or just an executive administrative assistant or whatever. In this system, we call them your administrative manager. They are your right-hand person, and they are every ideal client's single, simple point of contact. So once my administrative manager gets the call from the client, determines it's a tax question, or it could be an estate planning question or whatever, then we recommend getting that tax subject matter expert. We kind of work back channels with our tax subject matter expert, let's say, and my administrative manager contacts them behind the scenes and asks them to provide my administrative manager with four available call times, all within one business day of the client's original request for a call. So how long are these calls? Well, normally they're 20 minutes or less, so we set them up for 20 minutes. And if they run long, then, we've got a decision on the call to make. We've got to decide whether, we have time to finish it up right then or whether we need to schedule a separate call. But schedule it for 20 minutes. That's normally plenty of time. And then my administrative manager after that tries to offer our client at least two or three of those time slots. So in other words, the subject matter expert gives my administrative manager four times. I try to make two or three of those work, even if I have to juggle things, if I have to move heaven and earth on my calendar to make it possible, because I am, I'm there to serve the ideal client. So we offer two to three of those time slot choices for a call to the client, and that's going to be both of us on the line. All right, so you facilitate the call, but then your subject matter expert takes the lead. So at the appointed time, I initiate the call on my 1980s desk phone, and then I call the subject matter expert first. And then after two of us are on the line, then I add my ideal client to the call. Now, I like these three-way calls when my subject matter experts are new, mainly because I don't do much on these calls, except for listen. And what I'm doing is assessing the subject matter expert. That's the main reason I'm on the call. I do jump in when I'm asked if there's a question, but mainly I just sit back and I'm assessing the subject matter expert. So I start out the call, I set the stage, I say the words, well, the purpose of our call today is, and then I fill in the blank and double check with the client that's, what the purpose is, and then immediately hand it over to the client and the subject matter expert, and then they interact however they want. So I have two purposes on the call. Number one is observe the quality of my subject matter expert's advice and their professional manner. I'm always assessing whether my clients are impressed with individual team members or not. And then second, since I haven't seen enough evidence from this new subject matter expert yet to decide whether or not they actually know how to exceed a client's expectations or not, well, I'm looking for that, and I'm prepared to jump in the conversation to impress the client myself if my subject matter expert fails to answer the client's actual question, let's say, or to clearly establish the next steps. So many times with a new subject matter expert, I'll realize that at the end of the call, they haven't restated what's going to happen next. So I'll jump in and say, okay, so here's what's going to happen after this call. Or sometimes they fail to summarize what we plan to do after the call. In other words, what we're going to do behind the scenes as a result of this conversation. So I jump in to protect my relationship with the client if I feel the subject matter expert did not do enough in the call to exceed their expectations. So I'm there for those two reasons. All right. So I continue this until I have hard evidence that this particular subject matter expert is capable and understands and is in actually exceeding clients' expectations. So for the first 4 to 8 months of a subject matter expert being on the team, we always conduct three-way calls just like this. And after a subject matter expert has earned my trust, and I've seen that they indeed know how to consistently impress clients, then I encourage ideal clients. I still encourage the clients to call our administrative manager because usually that is easier for them. Administrative manager is the single simple point of contact. And if the client is, I don't know, for lack of a better word, trained to just, you know, call the administrative manager, our administrative manager will make it happen, get this thing put together. However, if after I'm, you know, convinced the subject matter expert skilled at exceeding client expectations, if we're happy to give the subject matter expert's direct line, their direct number to the client, if the client prefers that. It's all about what the client prefers ultimately. And until I have evidence the subject matter expert knows how to exceed client expectations, I just tap dance and, you know, I tell the client that I'd like to be involved until I get to know the client's situation a little bit better. They don't need to know why I'm on the call. I'm the most trusted advisor. I'm the advisor in the relationship coordinating everything. It's usually never an issue. Client never pushes back. But ultimately, it's about what the client wants. After I've got my confidence in the subject matter expert, if the client wants to call the subject matter expert directly, no problem. One last thing, your last point that you make, I always require the interaction log within one business day. So if one of the benefits of me being on the call is, you know, we're recording all calls, so the recording of the call goes to my administrative manager. If I'm on the call, we create the interaction log. So what is the interaction log? The interaction log is nothing more than the notes from the meeting. But the interaction log is in a specific format. So the way each of us takes notes on a call like this, it's hard for you to imagine probably, but we all take notes different ways. And some take cryptic notes that only they could understand later if they read it. And other people just write down bullet points of, you know, little things that'll jog their memory, but they leave out key information that if somebody else were to read the notes, they leave out often, we all do this, we all often leave out key information that we assume is a given, but if somebody else were to read the notes, they'd be lost. They don't know exactly what's going on as a result of this call. So we created the interaction log. It's nothing more than a format for taking notes of an interaction so that if somebody comes in behind you and reads the notes, they're not lost. Like, for example, when was this? Was it a phone call? Was it a face-to-face meeting? Or was it a email? Or, you know, you just fill in the details of what happened or the, you know, in the context for the call. Why did it happen? Well, in this case, the client called in with a tax question. You know, all these little background pieces are filled in the interaction log. I'll put an example of an interaction log in the replay of this session so that you can see what I'm talking about. But in essence, we always require the interaction log within one business day. If I'm on the call, my office creates it. However, on your example where the subject matter expert speaks to the client directly and I'm not involved, well, it's up to them. If they're going to have the direct call with the client, they've got to create the interaction log. They've got to submit it to my administrative manager one day later. So if the subject matter expert ever speaks to an ideal client or frankly has any interaction with anyone about any of my ideal clients, and it could be they're calling, I don't know, a client's bank or institution, just ask them a question, any kind of interaction about an ideal client, we expect them, the subject matter expert, to submit the interaction log, which is their notes, to our administrative manager within, I'd say, 24 hours after the call. But, you know, technically it's one business day. So, and then, just so you know, why do we get this? Well, it's because my administrative manager then posts these notes in a place so that all the subject matter experts who are assigned to this client can see that interaction log. So, you know what? I will put an example of the interaction log, and I will cover the interaction log more in detail on next month's call. And if you have a question between now and then, you have a question about the interaction log, just submit the question through Contact Us on the system, and I'll respond to you. Okay, next question. I understand that this is not, you know, here it comes. This is the question that's beyond the scope of the Advisor Pack Monthly program, but I'm going to answer it anyway. I understand that this is not a client acquisition focused program. However, I found you through Bill Bachrach's program, and Bill highlighted how Mark acquired his clients by literally talking to hundreds of prospective clients. If possible, can Mark spend a moment in a future call to address how he was so successful and how did he find so many people who were willing to talk to him and deliver the roadmap discussion? Okay. I'm going to cover the roadmap in a minute. That's Bill Bachrach's process, because another question comes in here in a minute about the financial roadmap. He's talking about Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap process. And Bill, I just had lunch with Ann and Bill 2 days ago, and he talks about this a lot. For those of you that don't know my story, I will point you to a place in a minute, I'll show you where you can go kind of read my whole story and what Bill Bachrach finds so interesting about my story. But basically, my story is that I acquired 1,242 clients before I met Bill Bachrach. And then, so that's a pretty dumb business model. I was in this business to make a difference in clients' lives. And I woke up one day and I had 1,242 clients and realized I can't make a difference in that many clients' lives. I can't even meet with that many clients, even on an annual basis, once a year even. So I hated the job. I hated I was making tons of money. I was the number one producer at our nationwide broker-dealer firm. But I hated the business. I was actually thinking about leaving the business. Then I met Bill Bachrach, and Bill Bachrach taught me his financial roadmap process, and he got me thinking about how, well, in essence, cut to the chase, it's rather than be everything to every client, just, you know, do a whole lot for your clients, but for a whole lot fewer clients. In other words, do tons more, Mark, for each client than you're currently doing, but don't do it for that many clients. Do it for just a handful of clients. But, you know, obviously you're going to have to charge them a lot of money. So I did, and my revenue went from $388,000 a year to $1.6 million. And that $388,000 was commission revenue at the time. You know, I was kind of a stockbroker type, you know, and commission oriented. And then I met Bill, and he got me thinking about this. And so I created everything that you're implementing right now, all these client deliverables. And in 34 months, I converted from commissions to recurring revenue fees, like ongoing fees. And it went from $388,000 in commissions to $1.6 million in recurring revenue. So how did I do that? So it's funny that you asked this, because as crappy as my business was with 1,242 clients, and I hated the business, I was thinking about leaving the business and all of that, the number one question, would you believe the number one question that we get on the Advisor Pack Monthly site and on our flagship program, the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, even to this day, the number one question that we get is, Mark, I know it's a bad idea, I get it, but how did you ever acquire those 1,242 clients to begin with by talking to hundreds of people? Anyway, it's just a point of curiosity. So here's my client acquisition process, and then I'm going to follow up with something. Now I'm going to ask. Then I'm going to ask you a favor, because I'm going to help. I'm going to map all this out in a way that you can take from it elements that'll be useful to you. But I need your help. I need your input. So I'll describe that in a minute. Let me walk through the process that I used to acquire all my clients. All right. So basically, it's what I called and told my staff is the Marketing 101 project. That was what I called it. That's what I still call it. When I talk about it to financial advisors, often at Bill Bachrach's events, I'll stand up and walk through the process. But the Marketing 101 project, it just goes back to my college days where I took marketing. And Marketing 101 says, you know, of your potential ideal clients, who even knows you exist? You know, that's marketing. It's getting your name out there so that your market knows who you are. Well, my Marketing 101 project told me nobody knew me. This was when I was in my late 20s. You know, nobody in my community, none of my potential ideal clients, they don't know my name and they don't even know what I do. They don't know I exist. So how do I solve that? What's the Marketing 101 project? Okay, so rather than sit in the office, so I worked at a Wall Street-based firm and everybody was sitting there cold calling. So 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, everybody was on the phone, calling, calling, calling. They were calling their clients. They were calling, cold calling. I mean, it was brutal. Everybody was calling out of the phone book, wealthy neighborhoods and stuff like that. Sorry, for those of you that don't know, a phone book is an actual physical book. It's papers with people's names and phone numbers in them. Today we would do it online. But the point is, I realized that these potential clients are not in the office. And I hated cold calling. I'm an introvert and I don't even like interacting with strangers. I don't, you know, I'm a classic introvert. So, but, you know, I can do things I don't like doing if I have to, but I drew the line at cold calling. I was like, I'm not doing that. I had to do it because our firm required it. So I made my, you know, I hate to tell you, even 200 dials a day. I did what I was required to do for the job, but then I left. I invested 3 of my 5 business days a week out of the office. So Monday and Friday, I did all these calls for the week. And every day I came in for an hour and did these cold calls that I was required to do. But mainly I invested almost all of 3 to 5 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, out of the office, because I figured my potential clients aren't in my office. And if I'm not going to cold call, what am I going to do? I got to get out of the office. So I got out of the office. So my strategy was just meet people, just be a nice person. Don't look at everybody as a potential client. You know, it's not like I look at someone and they start talking, they tell me they own a business and all of a sudden, you know, everything, you know, it's like in the movies where everything around them goes out of focus. Now I've got a spotlight on that person and I start salivating and I just see a piece of steak that I want to, you know, I don't view people as prey. I just said, I'm going to meet people. I'm going to go out and meet people. I'm going to just be a nice person. I'm going to get my name out there. I'm going to make sure that everybody knows I exist. And so, and when I met somebody, let's say I was involved at the Chamber of Commerce. I was involved at the American Heart Association. I was on the allocations panel for United Way. So, you know, don't do things that you're not personally interested in, but, you know, if you're personally interested in causes and community events or whatever it is that you are interested in, get out there and start meeting people. And then I would be introduced to new people on committees or whatever. And then I would meet them myself. But the point is, I made it a point with every person that I met. I'm saying every person I met, I would sit down with them. I would meet with them at least twice. And that is, you know, kind of trump up a let's go to Starbucks and have 20 minutes and you tell me how you got involved in this organization and why and, you know, give me some advice. You've been in the American Heart Association for 10 years and I'm just now getting involved. So could I take you out to coffee and you tell me what's really going on in this organization? So I literally not about business. I just met with every person twice, but I'm talking one-on-one, face-to-face twice. I never talked about my business unless they asked, and it's you learn very quickly when you go through this process that I did that people do ask, unless they're just completely socially clueless, as you're asking about them at some point, you know, and in a lull of the conversation, 99% of the time. So what do you do for a living, Mark? You know, and so they will ask, but I did not initiate. I always let them ask. And if they didn't, then I just figured, well, there is a plan for that if they didn't. So, but I never initiated, but I did identify people that seemed to meet my ideal client profile. So if, when I'm getting to know somebody, if they own a business or if they're a key corporate executive, got a lot of money and it's obvious, whatever, driver Rolls Royce, I don't know. I would start to make note of people that might meet my ideal client profile. And then I would have kind of targeted conversations about them just simply to determine whether they do or don't meet my ideal client profile. I never talked about my business, all about them. So what's the objective of this whole thing? It just sounds like you're just out there getting ready to get ready. You don't do anything, never pull the trigger and do anything. Well, I definitely never used the traditional sales process, but my objectives were to build my reputation and marketing 101. My goal was for every, it was a little unrealistic, but again, I was in my 20s and I did not have any limiting beliefs. My objective was marketing 101. I knew most people didn't even know who I am. So I said, I've got an ideal client profile. I want every person who meets this profile in my community, and specifically within 5 miles of my office. I want every person who meets my ideal client profile within 5 miles of my office to know who I am and know what I do. That's marketing 101. So I just got out of the office and started doing that. Okay, so what were the results? Well, let's kind of go through the strategy that ended up working. So I spent all the time before I met Bill Bachrach bumping into walls and figuring out what didn't work, you know, acquired 1,242 clients, built a really crappy business. But let me just tell you in retrospect what works. And then since 2002, we've been implementing this with other advisors just simply to validate if whether the process and strategy that worked for me actually works with other advisors. And it does. So let me kind of walk through what we've validated and can tell you with authority works really well. First of all, I focused exclusively on this one statistic. It took a while to gather it. And if you don't have this statistic, you can borrow mine because we've validated it. Bill and I were just talking about this 2 days ago that over thousands of advisors, this number works out roughly right. For every 7.8 initial client interviews, I acquired one ideal client. So, okay, so I'm out there meeting all these people, and some of them are asking me about my business, and then the conversation kind of then steers towards the business, and if they're curious about me, and if I'm a skilled communicator and I start saying things that are compelling and interesting and about what I do and, you know, makes them curious more and more about what I do, and I specifically wasn't doing a sales presentation or elevator speech or anything like that. I just said things in response to their questions about what I do that were compelling and got them wondering more about what I do. And so I knew that in steering these and identifying ideal clients, people that met my ideal client profile, that if I focused on those people and added enough value in their lives and said enough things that, you know, were compelling to them or interesting to them, that at some point I could pull the trigger and say, hey, you know what would be great? Why don't we sit down and just schedule a meeting, both you and your wife, and let's just see what you're trying to accomplish. And to the question that you asked, you know, what is this initial client interview? And in our program, I have 50, it doesn't really matter what your initial client interview is, except for there are 15 essential elements of an effective initial client interview. And so you can do whatever you want, but it's got to meet all 15 of those essential elements for this process to work, this strategy to work. And so the shortcut is Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap as the initial client interview. It meets all 15 of the essential elements, and you can complete a financial roadmap meeting with a client in less than an hour. So it was a shortcut for me. I just, at some point when I'm getting to know people, if they met my ideal client profile, I would, in essence, put the offer on the table, say, it sounds to me like you and your spouse need a financial roadmap. Does that appeal to you? And I'll tell you, even if they don't know what it is, somebody who likes the idea of the sound of having a financial roadmap, there's just, believe me, there's a lot of people out there that they don't even know what it is, but they know that whatever a financial roadmap is, they need one. And so if only for them and their spouse to get on the same page. But anyway, I put the offer out there. You know, it sounds like might help for you and your spouse to have a financial roadmap. I'd be happy to conduct that for you if you'd like to have a financial roadmap. And so, therefore, I focused on people that I met who happened to also meet the ideal client profile. I was always of service to them. At some point, I made the offer and see what they say. I was just a nice person. I never did selling. As a matter of fact, I reject the traditional sales process, which I was actually very good at, to be honest. I just hated it. So I did this instead. I never initiated the offer for the initial client interview, but I asked who they knew. Okay, so before we get to the point where I put the offer on the table, how did I get that conversation going? Well, I shared my ideal client profile with pretty much everyone I got to know pretty well. So let's say I'm getting to know someone, I'm in the Chamber of Commerce, and we're working on a committee together, we're at the United Way, or whatever we're doing together. And I would take them out to coffee sometime and say, look, Marketing 101, I am trying to get people in this community who meet my profile to know I exist. And that's all I'm trying to do right now. So I need a list of people who meet my ideal client profile does not exist. I can't buy it. It doesn't exist anywhere. Would you mind if I bought you coffee sometime, showed you my ideal client profile, and you just helped me build the list? I'll show you what I've got. And if anybody comes to mind, you know, I'm not going to ask you to introduce me or anything. I just want to help build the list. Well, that's how I started the conversation. Well, that's what I did. So how did I make sure that this worked? Well, one thing I did figure out is you can't go do this process on the shipyards, on the docks. I mean, you can't go do this in certain places like biker bars or something. I knew I had to be fishing in the right ponds. So that means I have to actually be where people who meet my ideal client profile likely are gathering. And so I would be involved. I was involved in the United Way. I was involved in the American Heart Association. I was involved in the Chamber of Commerce. Why? Because wealthy people are involved in those organizations, and particularly the Chamber of Commerce, small business owners are there. That's why they joined the Chamber, because they're small business owners. So I made sure I was always fishing in the right ponds. I was always kind of involved in organizations that interested me, but only if they were the right venue for my ideal client profile. And then I did focus on people that I met who were dealing with money events. So all this is like whole modules on each of these things. I'm just flying through it in the interest of time. But what's a money event? Well, there are certain points in an affluent, successful person's life where, and it's very few times in their life, but there are some times when they know they need some advice, they need a financial advisor, and it could be that they've got a major financial transaction that the date is set and they've got to make a decision. If it's a corporate person, they could have their company offer them early retirement, so they've got to respond in 60 days or something. Or if it's a business owner, somebody comes and makes them an offer to buy their business, or you know, or they have a big piece of family property that somebody's made an offer to sell, and half the people in your family want to sell it and the other half don't. So maybe a little advice would help. Or maybe there's an inheritance, or maybe they're going through a divorce. But you get what I'm saying. There are certain events in people's lives, I call them money events, where you know, now they're focused on asking their friends, who are you working with, and are they any good, and all that. So I was on the lookout for people that were in these moments of time in their life where they were dealing with money events, and I spent more time with them. And so what are the results? That was the strategy, and the results from the strategy, that's kind of how I did it. What actually happened? Well, I acquired 83 ideal clients in 34 months. That's an average of 2.44 ideal clients per month. No financial advisor yet has ever beat this ideal client acquisition record. Now, I know that sounds cocky, but, you know, I'm friends with some very world-class financial advisory coaches and consultants. I mean, Bill Bachrach, I'm his poster child. He constantly says, you know, I know for a fact because I'm involved with his program. In all these many years that Bill's been doing this, over 20 years, no financial advisor's ever beat that record who's worked with Bill. And Bill works with some of the best financial advisors in the world. And I've been through John Bowen's CEG Worldwide program. I mean, I'm an industry guy at this point. I know a lot of people. And none of these world-class coaches or consultants that I interact with, nobody's ever had... Yeah, maybe in a short period of time, maybe over 6 months, maybe even over a year, but I'm talking 2.4 ideal clients per month, month after month after month, year after year after year, like consistently acquiring that pace of ideal clients. So that's my strategy and those are the results. So there it is. There's the answer to your question. Now, let me shift real quick and say that you've got a unique opportunity right now to get exactly what you need. You're asking that question for a reason. Maybe you're just idle curiosity. Most people ask that question because they're trying to acquire clients and they're looking for an edge. They're looking for something that will change things up so that they can acquire ideal clients more quickly. Or maybe some advisors, they're acquiring clients quickly enough. They just would like to acquire better clients more quickly, like ideal clients as opposed to regular clients. But whatever, you have an opportunity right now if you step up and take action. So I'm going to point you to a course or a website that we just launched. Let me see. Here's the chat. I'm going to put it into the chat for everybody. Give me a second here. Okay, I just typed it into the chat. So you can hunt around, scramble, go see if you can find where the chat is. It should be very obvious for you right now. But I launched a site about 30 days ago for people that are like, it's precedes what where you are right now. What we realized about a year ago is that entering into the Advisor Pack monthly program, it's kind of like jumping in the river. I mean, you have to kind of decide this is what you want before you jump in the river and start swimming and making progress with this methodology. So I created a site. It's a membership site, but it's free for anybody that goes there. But it's mainly for advisors that are kind of kicking the tires. They've heard about me, maybe through Bill Bachrach, maybe through other means. I mean, I'm really out there in the industry. So we get a lot of inquiries from financial advisors, frankly, all over the English-speaking world. And so I created this site really just to lay out my methodology without really much of any expectation. If you go to this site, there is a free course there. So if you want to sign up, I would recommend doing that because there's a free course on this site with 10 strategies. These are the 10 things that I believe every financial advisor needs to master. So it's called Mark of Mastery for financial advisors because these are the 10 areas that I believe, you know, if you really are a professional in this business, these are the 10 areas you need to master. But there is one lesson in that free course on client acquisition where it kind of walks through some of what we're talking about here. But I have been asked by the members of this site to lay out and create an actual course or a module on what we talked about today. Like, how did you acquire clients? What was the step-by-step strategy? And as you could tell, I'm sure you had a few questions as I went through that. And so that's what I'm asking for right now of that community. And I'm just asking you right now, if this is of interest to you, go to this site. You don't even need to log in. Go to this site and find this post. As a matter of fact, let me see if I can show you where it is. Okay, here it is. Here's the post. So I gave you the link to the whole site, But this is this post called How I Acquired 1,242 Clients, New Course Coming Soon. So let me put that link in. So here's a link. I just put it into your browser or into the meeting here, into the chat, a link directly to this post. So this, all this does is this describes what I just told you. I have been asked to create a module mapping out how I acquired clients. And then at the end, it says, you have an opportunity. You have an opportunity to help me. So I've created about 75% of this module at this point. For the last 25%, I'm going to let your questions drive it. So what are your top two questions about client acquisition that, in your opinion, I absolutely need to answer in this course? In other words, if you were going through this course, what questions do you have that you want to make sure get answered? Well, put them in here. I strongly encourage you, if client acquisition is something that you're focused on right now and you're trying to master that and you need some ideas, then go to this page, go to this post, this page on this new site, How I Acquired 1,242 Clients, New Course Coming Soon. And then just at the bottom, put your comments. What are your questions? You don't even have to join the site to do that. You just go to this page, put in your comments, and that's all I'm asking. And because, and for those of you, so the question is, once I finish this course, will you get it in the Advisor Pack Monthly Program? Well, it depends. If you're engaged and you're helping me create the course, then I'll flag you as someone that needs this information. It's beyond the scope of what we're doing in Advisor Pack Monthly. So what I've decided to do is anybody in Advisor Pack Monthly who goes to this page and kind of keeps an eye on our process developing this, put your comment in, ask your questions. I'll probably reply to your comment, trying to clarify exactly what you need in this course, make sure I understand what you're saying. But just put your comment in there about what you think this course needs to include. And if you do, if you're engaged in helping me develop this course, then I will make sure for sure when it's created, I will make sure you have access to it. Okay. So that is that. So the mark of mastery. So just at the bottom of that post, you saw leave a reply. That's where you just make your comment right there at the bottom. Well, let me fly through a few final questions here. These were the questions that just came in over the last couple of days. Do we share the financial roadmap with all subject matter experts? Okay, so now you're talking about internal on your team. Let's say that I'm working with the client's current tax subject matter expert. I'm still developing my deliverables team. Good for you. Yeah, that's how you do it. One at a time. Target the next subject matter expert vacancy you need to fill. Focus on that and fill it and move on to the next one. So you're working with a tax subject matter expert. Would I meet with them and show how I work and introduce them to the client's financial roadmap? Okay, so for those of you, not everybody in the Advisor Pack Monthly uses Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap. So I put this here for those of you that have no idea what we're talking about here. I would say about 3/4 of you on this program either you came to me from Bill or I sent you to Bill, because this is the process that I used. So typically when anybody asks me about client acquisition, I just send people over to this program of Bill's. And it's very reasonably priced. It's similarly priced to the Advisor Pack Monthly program. And oh, by the way, not to go too far off track, but once a year, Bill has a 3-day live training and for teaching this financial roadmap, and it's coming up in August. Matter of fact, now that I'm thinking about it, I will put the link to that in the replay of this page, of the replay page for this session, because he only does it once a year. And I'm telling you, you can learn this financial roadmap through online through his training program. But if you really want to get to the level that I got to and really be skilled at this, direct training with Bill is what it's going to require. And that same exact 3-day workshop is the one that I went to in September of 1999 that changed everything for me. That's where I got really, really good at this financial roadmap, was getting some direct coaching from Bill. So my process was very similar to many of you. I learned it well, in those days, back in 1999, I learned the financial roadmap from a book. And I also had videos of Bill doing the financial roadmap with actual clients. So between those videos and the book, I learned that way. So many of you are in the Advisor Roadmap virtual training platform. That's Bill's, it's kind of his Advisor Pack monthly program. It's an online program, but teaching the financial roadmap. Most of you are doing it that way, but you have one chance this year to actually get live training from Bill, and it's his three-day workshop. You can get information immediately by going to BillBackrack.com, but I digress. So let me answer the question. This, for those of you that have never seen it, is the financial roadmap. I'm sorry for this little distracting snippet of text. That was I grabbed this online before this session today, so this is the only image I could find that was of the big enough size to put on here. So this is a financial roadmap. This is what I do with clients at the initial client interview. This is the process that in less than an hour, 30 minutes to an hour, is the most compelling meeting with a financial advisor that any client has typically ever had, and they say so at the end of this meeting. So what is it? It looks kind of goofy. What is it? Well, it's an exercise that you go through with the clients. You start off with their values. You take them up the values staircase. Notice there's two staircases, so you do both spouses. So they get to speak their values. They get to say out loud, you know, here's what's important to me in life and in the world and in my universe and whatever. So they describe that. And then you ask them their goals. Now, these are specific goals that require money and planning to achieve. These are their financial goals. So they've described their values. Now they're listing their goals. And then the final thing you do is you do a current benchmark of their financial assets, like how much they have in cash reserves, how much do they have in assets that they've accumulated to be used for funding their goals, and how much do they have in debt, and so forth. So you just simply benchmark their current financial reality. And then on one big, huge sheet of paper, they've got their current situation connected with, you know, here's how much I've got in order to accomplish these goals. And once I accomplish these goals, I'm able to experience my values. So on one sheet of paper, this is often the very first time in a person's life that we've done this exercise. This is usually the first time in their life they ever made a connection between their goals and their values. That the reason they have financial goals is because there's things that are more important than money that are driving. There's a why behind the goal that's bigger. And that's why this is such a compelling exercise for potential clients. So that's the financial roadmap. Now, the question is, do I share this financial roadmap with all the subject matter experts? Yes. Yes. This and all the other subject matter experts are then going to use this, and then they're going to have a fact finder say, okay, so if this is what the client's trying to accomplish, and keep in mind, sorry, where did we go here? So now they've got on one sheet of paper, they see, and I give them a copy of this, okay, here's what the client's current financial asset situation is. Here's their goals. They don't typically care about the values. That's for the client. But mainly just these two right here. They see the goal. They see the current situation. Here are the goals. If the client's got these assets and they want to accomplish these financial things by these dates, and every goal has a date, then here's what I need to see. And so then they provide a fact finder after seeing this financial roadmap of, if I'm going to give some advice about my little narrow field of finance and what they need to do to help them keep them on track to these goals, then here's what I need to see. And then they give you a fact finder with a long list of information of what they need to see from the client. And then, yes, then it's your job, or your job in conjunction with the subject matter expert. One way or the other, if it were me, I always got the documents from the client. So because I wanted to be in the loop. I wanted to see all the finance. I didn't want information and documents going direct from the client to the subject matter expert without me seeing it. I don't mind subject matter expert having all the information they need. I just want to see it also. So I make it come through me, but that's just me. So that's what I do. I share it with all subject matter experts. They do see it. And so would I meet them and show them how I work? I'm not so big on that. I mean, I'm bringing the subject matter expert onto my team, not because of how I work, but because of how they work. I only invite subject matter experts onto my team because they have the most robust process in their little narrow field of finance that I can find. So I talked to 20 tax subject matter experts, and I invited you on the team because you had the most robust, most impressive process, or the one I felt that people who meet my client's ideal client profile, you have the process that I thought would impress that profile of client the most. So it's all about how they work, not how you work. And if they have a robust enough process, all they need to see is the financial roadmap, or at least that's all they need to see in order to generate a to-do list of other things they need to see. So you get what I'm saying? It's really about how they work. And yes, I share the financial roadmap, and that ought to be plenty. And frankly, if your process is good enough, by the time you're completing a financial roadmap, so how do you get this current benchmark? That's because if you're doing the financial roadmap, it's because you have become skilled at making sure that at that very first meeting, every potential client shows up with all their financial documents, not just a few, not just a little handwritten sheet of paper or a spreadsheet summarizing everything. No, they come with their financial statements. They come with their investment statements. They come with their wills and trusts and every insurance policy and everything, their powers of attorney and their benefits packages from work. I mean, I've had many, many potential clients come into this initial client interview to do their financial roadmap where they brought literally a box or a banker's box or something like that. I've even had clients come in with little miniature dollies, kind of like little airport two-wheelers full of financial documents. But yeah, the client brings in everything so that when you get to this process and then you have the subject matter experts, what I call fact finder, which is just a list of things they need to see if they're going to weigh in with their opinion. If you've done your job 99% of the time, you've already got what they need and you just make sure they get access to that as well. So that's the answer to that. Let's see. It's actually top of the hour. I need to start wrapping this up. I'm going to go long just because I'm going to answer every question that came in here. So if you need to go, go. If not, I'm going to keep going and you can always listen to the replay later. Next question. When I or my administrative manager call the client's current tax or estate planning subject matter expert or whatever to ask questions that you include in the deliverables comprehensive lifetime financial strategy. Actually, what you're trying to say is, so when you contact your subject matter expert to ask them questions about what they need in order to help you build what I call the client's comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. Okay. That's their plan basically. And after the client has signed the release, so we've provided the authorization to release information. That's in a previous one of these monthly sessions. You can just go back and look for that. It was a download. Somebody asked for it, and we put it in. So you get the client to sign all these releases. Now you're talking to the various subject matter experts. Is it best to tell the subject matter expert that I will be sending a rather long list of questions and then give them a few days to follow up with the answers? No, again, I think you've got it backwards. You certainly got it backwards from the way I do it. I don't tell them anything. I assume the only reason I invited each of them onto the team is because they are skilled and they've got a robust process. So there's a difference between my team and you say here the client's current tax or estate planning. So there's kind of two tax experts for every client. There's yours on your team, that's your subject matter expert. But then yeah, the client typically has a current tax person that they've been using. So we call the subject matter expert on your team the oversight tax subject matter expert, and we call the client's previous or current tax person that they're working with the implementation subject matter expert. In other words, our team is the oversight team and the client's current people are the people who actually implement the strategy. They're the implementation team. Let me map it out for you. I do this occasionally and I've done this before, but let me just fly through it. So the client has their tax accountant. They've got maybe a money manager they've been working with in the past. They have their own attorney, their own estate planning attorney, certainly have their own insurance agents like auto and homeowners and things like that. So that is what the client has been working with in their life, that's what we call the implementation team. That's who actually implements the strategy. Then your team is the oversight team. So you're paid to create the strategy and make sure the implementation team is implementing the strategy. Or said another way, your oversight team's job is to make sure that that the client's only receiving recommendations from anybody on this team, your team, their team, whatever. Nobody's giving the client any financial advice that isn't perfectly aligned with the overarching plan. Well, how does that happen? Because before you came along, all these people called the client directly. Well, you're right. I recommend each of your subject matter experts reach out immediately in a new client relationship, certainly in the first 104 days. To meet these counterparts. So your tax person meets their tax person, your insurance expert meets their insurance agents, calls them all up and explains the situation. But in the meantime, I think you said you're building your team, so they don't exist. Your team doesn't exist in full yet. So yeah, you're calling the client's people. And it doesn't matter whether it's you or your team. It's just as you scale up, it's better if your team does this. It's actually their job on your oversight team to reach out and, in essence, manage the client's team. And maybe you don't allow the client to have some of these people. So maybe because of your process, maybe the client's money manager has to go. Bye-bye. They don't exist anymore because you've got some other solution for that. Whatever. But usually the client does keep some of these people. And why not? Why shouldn't they? If they have an insurance agent for their auto and home that they've been working with for 30 years and they are great and they are good at what they do, why replace them? But that's beyond the scope of what you're asking, and it's beyond the scope of our system. So how do you communicate with the implementation subject matter experts? In other words, the client's old professionals or what you're calling current people. All right, well, here's the basic gist of it. Either you or your subject matter expert contacts them, and of course, the client has sent an authorization to release information, in essence saying, you know, Mark Little's my new advisor. I've asked him to do certain things. It's all a form, and it says, please give Mark whatever information or documentation he requests because I want him to have it. So you are authorized. Now, there may be a little bit of a hurdle there. So, you know, people are different. And a lot of it has to do with your social skills. Like, can you reach out to these people in such a way that they don't feel threatened? Because some percentage of these people feel threatened when they're called like this, or they feel their professional integrity is being called into question, you know, like a second opinion. That's not what's happening here. So it's up to you and your social skills to explain what is going on here. So unless it is part of your process for them to get fired, let's just assume for a moment it's okay that the client has their own tax expert and you're just trying to bring them on board. Here's the conversation flow when you reach out to them with the client's authorization to release information. And by the way, if they still have a problem talking with you, or they seem a little bit holding back or reserved, I would confront that immediately before I get into the conversation. If they still are not opening up and willing to share with you, even after they see the authorization the client has signed, then I usually try to get the client on a three-way, either right then if I can, or set it up within the next 24 hours. I try to get the client on a three-way call and coach the client. Say, I need you to say these words to this person. Explain the situation. So to say, you know, Mark's not replacing you, but I have asked Mark to do certain things. And I want you to give Mark whatever he asks for. Are you okay with that, Mr. Tax Accountant that I've worked for 30 years? And then let the client on the call answer whatever concerns they have. But after, the goal is either with the authorization to release information form, or if you have to get the client involved, which is horrible, but if you have to, it's worth it to get past that point where they understand that you're part of the team and the client wants you there. So here's the, after you get past all that, here's what you do. You explain, our joint client has asked me, that's you, to oversee their overarching plan. In other words, to make the point that after working with all these people, including this person, this professional, all these years, they came to me because there was no plan. There was no strategy, no overarching strategy. It did not exist. So I've been asked to come in and create and oversee it. This thing that never existed before, let's call it a plan. And our joint client has asked me to coordinate everyone, including you. So whenever you, Mr. Tax Accountant, have action items like you do, you know, from time to time for this client, if you have action items or recommendations for this client, our joint client, then please coordinate with me first so that we can ensure that your advice is perfectly aligned with the overarching strategy. And these are our client's marching orders. This is what the client wants to happen. In other words, what needs to not happen is you, who have never seen the overarching plan, contact the client directly after today with anything, because I need to take every recommendation, and not just yours, but the other professionals, even our own recommendations have to be run kind of through the process where the entire team, my team, the oversight team, and that's not just the tax person on my team, but the estate planning person, the financial planner, the insurance professional, you know, team leader, and money manager, everybody on our team is going to see every recommendation, yours, ours, everybody else's. Every recommendation kind of flows through this process just to make sure that it's perfectly aligned with the overarching strategy before the client sees the recommendation. So they have to understand there's a process, the client has wants it this way, and you're the point of contact, meaning your administrative manager is the point of contact. So from now on, anything you need, action items or recommendations, flows through me, not to the client first. Also, I can actually be of service to you, Mr. or Mrs. Former tax accountant for all these years, to the client. In other words, whenever you need anything from our joint client, just contact me, meaning your administrative manager, and I'll make it happen. I'll get it for you before the deadline that you need it, because I meet with these clients. Unlike you, I do meet with these clients every 4 months. This is the 3-meeting process. So, but please give me advance much notice as possible. I will get it I will get it for you, but you know, just please try not to make everything last minute. I mean, if you know in advance you're going to need a checklist of things over the next 6 months, then give me the list. I'll get all that stuff for you, and you'll have everything you need by the deadline that you need it. So while we're on that subject, what do you need right now over the next 4 months from this client? And I'll start working on it, because I meet with the client sometime in this next 4-month period. So that's the basic conversation, all right? And I hope that helped. All right, next question. With whom do I share my ideal client profile with? Do I show it to clients, subject matter experts, centers of influence? Yes, that's an easy one. You share your ideal client profile with everyone. I just had it on a piece of paper, but I've seen advisors who do this way better than I did. They put it on laminated cards and they hand them out like crazy. I think this is the marketing 101 make a list. This is the marketing 101 that I was talking about. How many people in your community know your name, know what you do, and know the type of client that you work with? I mean, it's the marketing effort that I spent most of my time doing in the hours of a week while I'm in the growth mode. In other words, if you're acquiring clients, if you're accepting new clients, then part of your time each week should be, in my opinion, marketing, like getting out in the community and just meet people and make sure that somewhere, how, some way, that as a part of your efforts, I mean, it's not mercenary. You're not there, not out there just doing that. But yeah, as people get to know your name at some point in the relationship, you know, how are you expanding the group of people who know what you do? And part of that's your ideal client profile. I think it's just part of being a nice person, and they'll start asking you, people you meet at some point will start asking about what you do. And if you have your ideal client profile handy, that's an easy conversation. And then last but not least, are all meetings with subject matter experts recorded, whether the client is present or not? Yes, every meeting is recorded, internal, external, on the phone, face-to-face. That is one thing that was a game changer for me is, and it was Bill Bachrach who had me start doing this, it's record everything. And disclose it, obviously. And there are laws about this in your various states and whatever the case. But I've got it on my website, you know. All interactions with anyone in our office are recorded. We've got it in the footnote in kind of fine print, but I mean, we put it everywhere. We disclose the fact that we record everything for training purposes. That's all it is, training purposes. And so we disclose it all over the place. And if you're using the financial roadmap, then you have Bill scripts this. So at the beginning of the initial client interview, if you're using Bill Bachrach's method, he actually scripts you to say and to alert the client that you're recording the meeting. So yeah, you alert everybody, your team and everybody that you're recording. And then yeah, record everything. And then you've got it for improvement later on. I mean, there's nothing more powerful as far as coaching and development, your development of your professional skills, than listening back to recordings. And you record client meetings to listen later for clues on ways to exceed their expectations. And then you record meetings with subject matter experts for two reasons. One is archival, so that for those subject matter experts that were not present in that meeting, but there may be crossover opportunities to serve the client, well, you know, they could listen to the recording if you provide it to other subject matter experts. The key is disclosure. Make sure everybody knows what you're doing. But having these things recorded are very, very useful. And the archival purpose is just as important. You know, I've had subject matter experts saying, hey, I never said I'd do that. And I go back and listen to the recording, and they damn sure did. They said in that meeting, you know, a month ago, they would do this, whatever, for a client. So I just think it's important for accountability and for archival purposes. Look, we're not trying to do anything other than exceed our clients' expectations. And if you record everything, you have a much better shot at doing that. Well, that's it for this month's monthly advisor session for the Advisor Pack monthly program. Listen, we wish you all the best in implementing. Continue contacting us and we'll answer your questions. And until next month, I'm Mark Little.